Taking you inside the game and breaking down every second of the action.
Nembhard, who's crowded him outside, gets the contact, fires away, and hits the three-pointer anyway. Oh, he's flexing again. Dame time arriving early here in the playoffs.
This is Box at Six.
We just got to be the team that, you know, even when we win, we got to be coming in the next day looking to improve and kind of like, you know, shore up some of the holes that we had in the game tonight and be better in the next one.
Broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Offices One Call That's All Studios at The Avenue, alongside former Elon University Hooper Zora Stevenson, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
Along with what a bunch of garbage. It's her show. I'm the assistant. Come on. Zora Stevenson, let's see, now the voice of Big Ten women's basketball, other basketball. I'm sure you're doing something at the Olympics, right?
We got to see. I just finished up covering wrestling trials.
Wow.
You know, wrestling.
I wrestled in high school. I know wrestling. Yeah.
It was really fun. It got spicy. So that's what I just got back doing.
Best athletes in the world. The toughest. Most fairest sport ever. Everybody has to be the same weight. Imagine playing basketball if everybody had to be the same height. How would that change things?
But what I did notice is the same weight is not always the same weight. And what I mean by that is, okay, Giannis is 2 whatever he is, right? Different on how Brooke Lopez, like their weight is very similar, but it looks different. It moves different.
Yeah, moves. It moves is the key. Yes.
But, are you in a good mood today? You should be in a good mood today.
Yeah. Well, I'm working with Zora Stevenson because I claim that one of my great predictions was you doing play-by-play for an NBA team. Now, first of all, I want to make – now, you have not turned down any offers yet, or maybe you have since you're doing so much other stuff.
To be the voice of an NBA team, yes. I have not turned that down.
Right. Did I say that you would do that? That was good. And I'm more certain than ever. I would say within the next, whatever you're doing, within 2 years from today, you will be the play-by-play voice on TV for an NBA team. Unless you turn it down. Not if you
Well, is this the same wager that you had when you said that I was going to be a coach? I'm just wondering where we're at.
No, I gave that up because you didn't want to be a coach. I didn't know that. You could have been a coach. You don't want to be a coach, right? Or do you want to be – would you rather be a coach or the play-by-play – TV play-by-play voice of an NBA team?
Oh, well, those are two great options.
I know. Well, like a college –
I was under the opinion of you can't turn down something you don't have. So I've never explored coaching. I love working with the youth, though. Like, I love working with people and the fascination of seeing them get better. Like, I love teaching. This is what I want to do. A goal that I have, Homer, is I want to get into being, like, an adjunct professor somewhere. That's what I really want to do.
Well, yeah, but see, if you're the play-by-play voice of an NBA team, you can conceivably have time off where you can do that. There are certain times of the year we can do that.
I can teach, like, a summer course.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. You've said 2 years. So.
I'm not predicting Dr. Zora Stevenson. Yeah. So, yes, coaching just owns you. It takes so much time. I mean, if you have a choice, unless you, and I don't think you were like born to want to be a coach, but if you have a choice to be a coach or play by play and you like both equally, no one would be a coach. Because you can help kids in other ways. You can give private lessons. Did you give any private shooting lessons? Have you done that before?
I've done that actually.
Yeah.
Middle was so fun, and like just the art of simply focused on form, footwork. It was how to make your shot better. It was fun.
Now, are we doing okay, Pebble? Do we need to have Zora call back? It seems like she's going in and out, and I can go in and out. No one cares, but if she does, then they care.
Yes, it's probably your internet connection is probably just a hit and miss right now, I would assume.
All right, should we take an early break so we can try round two? Because people have to hear every word she has to say. Otherwise, they're not going to be happy.
They're just calling.
Right. They'd call back and go, Homer, you went in and out, but I didn't really care. I just wanted to hear what Zora had to say. Because you have not only the Bucks, but you have Caitlin Clark. You were in the middle.
I love how you want to talk women's basketball now.
No, I don't want to talk women's basketball. There's a difference.
Okay.
I want to talk Caitlin Clark.
A homer. See, Homer, this is where we are not on the same page.
What do you mean we're not on the same page? She's Larry Bird. Every woman who plays basketball should hug her and thank her for the exposure she's creating. But they're not watching women's basketball. They're watching her, and in the process, they will see the greatness of other players, and it grows. Nobody's watching women's basketball. They're watching her.
Double-digit millions of people watch the national championship
game. Right, and you know what? And you know what? Next year's
millions watch the draft.
Correct. And next year's will go down significantly. Not because they don't care.
You can't.
Write it down. Write it down. And then in a year, you'll go, Homer, how do you know these? How do you know these things? She transcends the sport. She's Michael Jordan.
And women's basketball is amazing. You can't talk Caitlin Clark without talking women's basketball as a whole. That's the entirety of what she stands for. So you can't separate her from the game. And the game has risen, yes, partly because of her. But if the competition wasn't there, if it was just Caitlin Clark running over people and you didn't have the battle of South Carolina versus Iowa or the rematch of LSU and Iowa, I mean, South Carolina and Iowa's rematch too, you wouldn't have had those numbers. The numbers that the LSU-Iowa game had were because of Caitlin Clark and the Hawkeyes and Angel Reese and the LSU
so,
Tigers.
So, out of curiosity, when they go down significantly next year, what will be your explanation?
I have to – have you heard of the name Juju Watkins, Homer?
Yes.
I'm going to need you to do some homework.
Okay. What do you mean if I've done my work? She can put up 60 a night. She is arguably a better player than Caitlin Clark overall, all aspects of her game. I would, well, she's so much younger, but would I say she's better? That's close. She might be, but Caitlin Clark shoots from another city, so she doesn't have that. But
agreed.
As an all around player, she's better. But not as many
Juju
people are
Watkins
watch her.
Than Caitlin Clark. Juju put up better numbers.
Yeah.
In her freshman year,
I know, but I'm saying right
so
now,
we have yet
freshman versus senior, she has a wider range of outstanding skills than Caitlin Clark. Can't shoot as well.
I'm not skill sets.
Like, you're not?
Obviously, okay. Has the ability to shoot from the set of people. Juju's handle is nuts. Like, the ability that she has to create her own and her mid range, that's something is not part of Caitlin.
All right, we got a break for this. This stuff is really good, and you're going in and out again, and it's just not acceptable. All right, round two, we're gonna call Zora back, and I know we do the VMix, but I don't even care if we lose the video. They just have to be able to hear you perfectly. Round two, next. Yes, Bucks at six, the Zora Stevenson Show. I'm the assistant, Homer. All right, we got Zora figured out so that everything she says you hear perfectly. We'll get back to
Caitlin. Maybe it's for the best.
It's way for the best. We'll get back to Zora talking about Caitlin Clark because we'll just do this as the beginning of the show. And it's all about the Bucks. What of all that occurred in the game, what impressed you the most about the win?
The start. We began our back and forth talking about wrestling. Throwing the first punch, throwing the first hit, being aggressive. The Bucks, and more specific, Damian Lillard did that. Homer, this was the performance that we all thought we were going to see night in and night out when he got traded. And, you know, all year, like, I mean, I still am a big fan of Drew Holiday, right? And, you know, obviously I covered the team closely when
the world is a big fan of Drew Holiday.
Yeah. And so it's so hard not to, you know, think in your mind about all you're losing and all you're missing without him. But Damian Lillard going off for 35 in the first half, it was great to see that given all that the Bucks gave up to get him. And that's what we, as NBA fans, have been so accustomed. Chris Middleton said, I've been seeing that through the TV for years. And it was nice that Damian was his teammate last night. Kudos to, I know that had to feel good personally. Like, great that the Bucks won game one, but for Dame personally, I'm sure that performance just had to feel really, really satisfying. And then in the second half, you know, they maintain. I would have liked to see, and I'm being picky here because that's what we do. I would have liked to see them, you know, Dame kind of keep going and not give the Pacers any life. They kept it. But, you know, there was a couple pieces came a little bit too close for me. But it was, they built a big enough lead in that first half where the game was essentially done in the first two frames. And kudos. But you're like, hey, if they play like that every night, we'll be great. But, you know, we know it's a series. We know how the playoffs go. And each game is its own story. So I'm interested to see what tomorrow night brings. I know I'm rambling. No, keep going. That crowd, I wasn't there. Oh, my goodness. That's the biggest thing I miss is just the atmosphere inside Pfizer Forum being there. You could sense it through the TV, though. Like, keep it going, Milwaukee. Whatever energy you all had, whatever you did, whatever you ate for breakfast before you went to the game, I need you to do that again for game two because you could feel Pfizer Forum rocking through the TV, and it was amazing to see it because those are the fans I know and love.
Yeah, I said on Twitter, like they talked about a shirt. I said, I don't care about the shirts. I can't remember any games I did where it was the shirt. It's all about the energy. There was one place, I don't know, maybe it was in Tampa somewhere, where they had somebody, a team had a decibel meter. I said, what people remember is the noise, the energy. Nobody remembers, oh, man, remember the shirt we wore? I don't think so.
Well, the shirts are a part of what helped bringing that energy.
Okay, if they help get the energy.
No fun. You're like, you don't like having fun, do you?
No, the fun is, all right, the fun is when crowds go crazy. When you're there and the noise and the energy is so loud, it like changes how you feel.
As when you can feel the beat of DJ Shauna and whatever celebratory beat she's playing, you can feel it in your chest. That's
yes.
When you know.
And it's not based on the T-shirt you have. Now, if you could convince me that the shirts, like, they give away food now and everybody loves it, right? Right? Yeah. That's the whole thing. It started, Marquette had a Shake Shack. Now they have one. Who is it? The Cleveland where they missed two free throws. It's all about somebody missing two free throws. I think they should do that with the decibel meter. You get to a certain level five times, and everybody gets chicken tenders or whatever you get when they miss two free throws. Tell me that wouldn't get the place rocking. No charge for that idea.
That is in the hands of the fans. You have to do something that's out of the fans' hands to do the giveaways. So, because if you gave away, you know, free chicken, if they got the decimal meter to a certain point, they would get it every time. All this, you know, everyone would scream. It would work too easily. And the whole point is that, you know, these companies don't really want to give away the free chicken.
I can make it tough. I can set the stamps. But anyway, as a shooter, and people can check her the stats of Zora Stevenson in college. They're all over the internet. Good shooter. Go through your watching what Damian Lillard did in terms of his shooting throughout the first half. I just want to know the different thoughts or emotions that you had watching the show that he put on.
It's all in the motor. Like, yeah, okay, we can talk about the mechanics. We can talk about the balance of the legs and the form. He already has all that down. Like, when he misses, he already knows that something is going in by the time it leaves his finger. He was so on. I could tell when his body was going to go in a certain. I was like, oh, he's putting it up, and it's going in, before it even left his hand. That's just the energy that he was exuding. When you're on fire as a shooter, no one can do it. It was almost better if the Pacers didn't guard him, because then they wouldn't give him an opportunity for a four-point play. And then, like, shooting is contagious, specifically with this Bucks team. What I saw last night is what I've been, like, yearning for the entire season. Like, I had missed seeing that fire, that passion, simply the guys just having fun. And I felt that yesterday. And like I said, I felt it from through the TV. It was amazing to see. And now it's just like, okay, the consistency. How can we – and what I love when Doc, he had a quote, and it said, we have to get better. And I love that mentality. He said, the Pacers are going to get better. We know that. And the playoffs is all about who can continue to get better. So I'm excited to see how the Bucks come out in game two. Damian Lillard should not lose that aggressiveness and that fire, even when Giannis comes back. Like, Homer, we know Dame can play like that. The numbers showed you all through the regular season, but he puts up more points, rightfully so, when Giannis is not available, right?
Yep.
And so it's like, okay, how can he, you know, perform like that and look for his shot consistently even when Giannis is in the game? And I don't have the answer to that.
What? That's one of the reasons I wanted you on. That was my number one question.
Okay, I have an idea.
All right.
To me, Dame should punch first because Giannis is going to get his. And so, and Dame clearly, from what we saw yesterday, he's the type of guy, like, once he gets in a rhythm. He needs a rhythm, though. And so, let Dame punch first because Giannis is going to get his. Giannis doesn't need you to feed him. Giannis can create, like, let Dame punch first offensively. And sometimes, and Giannis is just so used to this, and because of the positions that he's been in, he's punch first. Like, when Giannis has that look in his eye.
Damian, Dame punch first.
No matter who is available.
Right. We're talking about, this is ahead of ourselves a little bit, but it's about the best way, because this is going to come up. So now, what are you going to do when Giannis is back? And so you have to have an answer for that, and yours is Dame punches first. All right. Number two.
Yeah. Well, that's the answer to me.
Well, hold on. Well, but then he punches first. So when does the punch first end, or how do you determine the punch first, or is it the first quarter or
the flow of the game. Giannis. All right. So I just don't think, like, okay, right out the gate, first place should be for Dame, right? And then Giannis is going to get his naturally.
Right. What I'm saying, when you say the Dame punch first, I'm saying the first 8 minutes, 6 minutes. It doesn't mean he's going to lead the scoring, but the premise is get Dame going.
And however, he should be in
however that
mode.
Works.
Yes, exactly.
Now, here's so my...
When time is winding down, he's already been in that go mode, and it's not just like, oh, end of the game, we need you, but you haven't been aggressive the entire game.
Yeah, you've already done
that. I still think that's a way for both of them to impact the game.
Now, my theory also on top of that is, I think you need to fill a certain amount of time when they don't play together. Okay? So that I don't know how you can do that, but there need to be X number of minutes in the game where Giannis is the guy on the floor or Dame is the guy on the floor. Hmm. When one of they never rest together, ever. One of them is on the floor for X number of minutes so that each of them get that ability to do what they're also accustomed to doing, to kind of take over. So you have Dame punches first. There needs to be a time where both of them, I don't know how many minutes, get a chance to, with the other one resting. And then at the end of the game, all things equal, it's Dame time. Like, he's going to control it. Giannis can still get it where he can dunk or whatever. But what do you think of that?
Not you passive aggressively saying that Giannis, where he can dunk or whatever. My man has perfected the fadeaway from the short corner, the mid range.
Don't be telling me that. With the game on the line, that isn't going to be the play.
No. I agree. I'm just saying. You know, there's other ways that Giannis gets the shot.
Oh, he can score the other ways. But late in the game, the premise is they got Dame because at the end of games, he can take over and.
Nobody's arguing that. Like, the players aren't arguing that. We're not arguing that. That's why, like, I mean, there's a bunch of reasons why they want a Dame, but that's why. Late game situation, you give the ball to Dame. And he's got to be like, he knows how to do that. He did it in Portland for so many years. I don't know if it's just hard when you, like, you know, come to a team and it's someone else's team and, you know, you're just naturally want to deflect, but you got to, Dame time. But
yeah,
I need him to
I agree. I think
time,
I don't know how to answer that question. That's what I ask you. Yes, it's Dame time, but you have another guy over there. Giannis is one of the best players in the world. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. How do I fit? Yeah, here's the question. How do you fit Giannis into Dame time at the end of games?
Well, all respect. It's called Dame time for a reason. I think Giannis is okay with.
Okay, so what does Giannis, so it's Dame time, what does Giannis got to do? Giannis has got to move around, or Giannis has to set screens, Giannis has to rebound?
Set a really great rebound, set a really, really good screen. You play them in the pick and roll, and everybody thinks it's Dame time. You can't leave Giannis open. It depends if the Bucks need a three or two or whatever. But, like, play them in the pick and roll, clear everybody else out, and make the defense make a decision. And Dame should come off of that screen trying to score. That is what is so key. If he comes off of that screen like he's looking for somebody else, then the defense doesn't really have to make a decision, doesn't have to play him. It helps if he's made a couple of those longer threes earlier in the game. That's why I said it's so imperative that he comes out aggressive, because then the defense says, okay, he's already hit three-plus threes a couple feet behind the line. I've got to go over the screen. And then you don't have, you know, the coverage of Giannis that you need. It's a sandwich technique. Dame time at the beginning, Dame time at the end, Giannis in the middle. Maybe I should be a coach. No, I'm just kidding, because I have all the respect for the strategist, and it takes so much to be an NBA coach.
This is something everybody's thought and wondered about. I don't think Damian Lillard has ever addressed it or had to in his career. I was fascinated by the Pacers in the second half because I thought it was like a sixth grade game. All right, double team that guy.
Double team?
It was like a sixth grade double team. They weren't even thinking about the other person. They were double teaming him. Go ahead.
There was one point in the first quarter that Dame had 16 of the 20 points. That's right. Why they were doing that.
Well, no, but you've done a lot of NBA games. I want you to tell me a game that you've done in your career in which a double team was used that, every time, or there wasn't even a concern about the screen. When the screen was made, the two guys are next to Dame, right? They didn't even care or know what anything else was. And I can't remember games in which a player was double teamed that clearly, quickly, easily, with absolutely no regard. They had one job, double team Lillard. Well, what about the other guy? Yeah. Who, where, what? I don't care. Just like in the sixth grade.
And kudos to everybody else. That's what I love so much about it, too, though, was everybody else stepped up, too. And that's like, you know, we used to have the bench mob nicknames, and it's like, it's time to bring those back. I'm trying to bring up the box score here. I want to see how many bench points. Okay, so 20-19, not crazy. But Pat Connaughton has some big shots. And then obviously what Bob – it felt like – I mean, Bobby only had 11. You want to talk about a big 11 points. I looked up. I thought Bobby had at least 15 and a half. And he didn't. He had some impactful shots. And then came in with the slight 20 and 10. It's just the consistency, you know? I mean, is it right to have to rely on Dame for that until Giannis comes back? I mean, he can do it. He's used to doing it. But obviously the Pacers are going to do the sixth grade double team maybe from the start.
I'm curious. I would assume so, though. They know the Bucks are going to adjust, and so maybe they go the other way. I mean, you can play it. There are a number of ways to play that. You can play it different ways. You don't have to make it. I mean, in the timeout, it'd be like, all right, sixth grade double team. What's that mean?
But also yeah. Like, you know, on the Pacers offense, I mean, Tyrese Halliburton only took 9 shots.
Yeah, he just had a bad game.
He usually averages 15. It was just, And so you got to be careful because Halliburton is going to come out firing game two. That's more so what's on my mind than, I mean, Dame, don't change anything. That's number one. Don't be passive, be aggressive. And then Tyrese Halliburton is going to try to make his mark. He was new to playoff basketball, hadn't experienced it. Now he's like, oh, okay. And you just got to be ready for that.
Well, they had 94. They'll score over 100 easily. I mean, that was like, what is the low, one of the lowest scores of the entire season for him. So, it's hard to say this. And my partner, Tony Smith, always complains when I say, it's all about shooting. I mean, they were 8 of 38 three-point shooting. I think if you shoot 8 of 38 in an NBA game, 21%, somebody can look the stats up. You shoot 21% three-point shooting, and you have to have...
Yeah, you're going to lose.
You're going to lose. And and we know
it's a make-or-miss league, Homer.
What?
We know that. A make-or-miss league. Have you heard that?
Yes, but I would say watching the game, and I will defer to you, they had a lot of open threes. I mean, there are some games when the defense is so good that they force you to take tough threes. I would say they had more than their fair share of easy threes. I don't know who it was. I think it was McConnell, who got two in a row. And then he got another one. I can't take this. So he drove to the basket. But would you say there was a fair number of open ones that they would normally make or do better?
Agreed. That's why I was so appreciative of Doc saying the Bucks have to be better. Like, I'm not, I want to celebrate, you know, the game one win as much as anyone, but I'm also going to, you know, take on the vibe of the team. You know, Dame was saying, hey, it's one game. Doc too. Like, they know the Pacers are going to play different, play better. And so the Bucks have to match that. Like, it was the Bucks offense that won that game. And it's crazy to say that when you had a game that was 109-94. Normally, if you saw that score, you would think it was like a defensive juggernaut.
Yep.
And it wasn't. The Pacers just missed shots. And so, yeah, they can't get those same looks. And you can't wait for them to make them and then adjust. I think the adjustments have to, you know, come from the start. You don't want to get them fired up. Because as we saw with Dame, once a couple go in, players start to feel nice. And at some point, there's just nothing you can. There was nothing you could do to stop Dame in that first half. There was nothing.
I want to know at what point.
It was so fun.
I know. I want to know at what point you were saying every time he took a shot, it's going in. That's going in. Like one where he was fouled and he's way out and he just like threw it up. But I'm sure you're going. I know that feeling. It's going in. He hasn't shot yet. Yeah, but when he does, it's going in.
Couple minutes.
Yep.
Left in the first quarter.
Yep. There you have it. All right. Third quarter. Yeah. Zora Stevenson next. Bucks at 6 with Zora Stevenson. I'm the assistant Homer. Zora Stevenson, of course, formerly part of the TV team for the Milwaukee Bucks. And now she's gone on to bigger and better things. I didn't anticipate that you would be doing wrestling, but it clearly means that those at NBC or Peacock have faith in you because wrestling's different, as you would agree, right?
Yeah, the scoring system's different.
Everything's different.
The fact that their matches are 6 minutes is different.
Mm-hmm.
All the weight classes, and basically each weight class is a different sport, it seems like. All the different characters. Yeah, but it was fun. I actually really enjoyed it. And there was a lot of upsets because it was a turning of the tide in USA Wrestling. Like a lot of the
older guys,
the OG goats. Yeah, the older guys just couldn't keep up with some of the younger people. Women's wrestling is really taking off. Memberships have more than doubled in the last year. So it was really, really awesome.
Did they require, as I would, that in order to do wrestling, you must be able to speak at least 30 seconds about Dan Gable?
No.
They didn't. Well, they're wrong. Dan Gable, the greatest American wrestler ever, some have better records, won an Olympic gold medal when the Russians were in their prime. Nobody scored a point on him in the Olympics. 0 points.
Wow.
So.
And did they have technicals back then? Yeah, I'm assuming so, right?
They had everything. Everything was the same. And the younger people, it's like, so yes, anytime you want to impress someone, do you have a Dan Gable story, especially older people, the young people? Kale Sanderson is kind of the new Dan Gable, but he's no Dan Gable, but he's close. All right, back
it's wild to me that a technical is a good thing, because in basketball, I'm like, wait, we don't want tech.
Yep.
But yes, that's my transition back to the Bucks.
Yep. Oh, figure four, two-leg takedown, double-leg takedown. I don't know how much they required that you know that stuff. Anyway, back to the Bucks. I thought. Wanted to know on, well, this is not about the Bucks. What do you miss the most from doing that?
Oh, the people walking into the arena, seeing familiar faces, people that became not just friends, but family, the atmosphere. Like, there's nothing like it. NBA games are just so fun, and the fact that I went to those for work, and the familiarity. Like, now I covered a lot of different events and they're amazing, like football and even Big Ten, you know, basketball, but I'm going to different arenas every day, every night, right? And so it's not the same crew. And so I just appreciate the same crew from behind the scenes and traveling with the team. Homer, I mean, we were just so spoiled. It's like the way that the Milwaukee Bucks travel.
Well, it's like monarchy. You're monarchy. That's what it is, right?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's like rock stars. Right. And so I missed room service at the Four Seasons.
Yeah.
You know, who wouldn't? So, yeah, but the top of the list is the people. But thankfully, I've stayed in touch with so many of them. Wished a number of them good luck before everything started. So especially like on the business side and, you know, just some of the people that help the machine go. I know like the players are at the forefront as they should be, but there's so many people behind the scenes that make sure that the ship sails. And yeah, I root for them just as much as I root for players.
Players answer this. You answer that. What's different about the playoffs? When someone asks you that question, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you?
Ooh, everything. But more specifically, every possession matters more. The intensity increases. There's less room for mistakes. The mistakes have more of an impact. But I feel like the energy in Pfizer Forum, we didn't see that at all during the regular season. And as an opponent coming into that, the physicality, the rest lets you play more, right? So you're used to getting a foul call. You don't get it. That could throw you off. Yeah, the nature of it, like, I'm sure practices, you're not getting up and down anymore. You're not scrimmaging. You got to stay fresh. You got to stay within a rhythm between games. The coaches are probably calling plays more specifically, whereas in the regular season, maybe sometimes it was like pickup. I mean, the strategy just gets bogged down to a T. Everything is different in the playoffs, which makes it like I hadn't been like you. That's why you get excited for it. I mean, I was looking at the schedule. And I'm like, oh, like I can watch basketball, meaningful basketball every single day this week. And I know, Homer, you say it doesn't start till now. I don't believe that, but I'm just repeating what you say. You say this is when the season starts.
No, this is when, especially with people that don't like the NBA, when I said, look, the playoffs are the best basketball in the world, and it's not even close. There's nothing like it. And so if you're bothered by it, then don't watch. I'm not telling everybody not to watch. You just watch the playoffs, and I was going to ask you the follow-up, like, because you get to do the first series. I don't know how much you follow it after, but like, are the players different? Are you like, in the playoffs, I don't go there. I don't ask that question. Or maybe they're.
Yes. Even from a journalism standpoint, the access is different. Like, when I was at the Bucks, we did some cool features. Like, I'd do the film room, yeah. Or I would, you know, shoot hoops with the player. Like, all of that shuts down come playoff time.
And you're not surprised at all.
No, and maybe my first year, just because I didn't understand, like, the rhythm of it all. But, like, after that, I, like, Zora, any features, any fun you want to have, get that done before April. Because we were shutting it down. It is all about basketball. You won't see the guys out and about doing appearances because, you know, the focus really has to be on the court. And I respect that. I mean, this is – it's go time. Even around the facility, things change during the playoffs. Just the vibe because everything – matters so much more, but it's really cool. It's not a flip switch, but it's especially being around veterans, like the Bucks team is you know, full of people who have been through some stuff, and to see like their focus and them understanding the moment. I think that was the biggest thing game one. Like, yeah, Dame, but like the Bucks understood the moment way, way, way better than the Pacers. That was just so clear from jump. Now will the Pacers catch up and realize that this is different than the play-in tournament? You know, we'll see, but yeah, the Bucks understand playoff basketball. The players, the organization, everything, and it takes that to really get to where you want to go.
Explain the length of a series, or is it not long unless it goes past five, or what's the importance of every game and the how the intensity? But then you got to win four, or what's the dynamic of how that fits to. Every play is important, but it's you don't have to win every game. You only got to win four out of seven. How does that evolve in each series, or is each one different?
Well, that's why, like, the motto, and it's cliche, but it's so important, can't get too high or get too low. Because the series, even if you sweep someone, it's still a week, if not that, depending on the TV schedule. So you, it's not over till it's over. You can't even get excited, you know, up 3-1 nowadays. You got to finish the job. And so, yeah, like momentum is something. But I didn't used to believe in this. People say series doesn't start until the away team wins.
I think George Karl first said that, or I give him credit for it. A series does not start until somebody wins on the road. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
or not.
I didn't
sounds
used
good.
To. Yeah, at first I was like, what? No, like, you know. And you got, like, home court advantage. You're up 2-0, and you're going on, you should feel pretty good. And now I'm like, all right, 2 years in, okay, I get what they're saying. So much can happen. Like, when you go on the road, it's just a different, like, it's a different atmosphere. The home court advantage is really, really important. So, yeah, it's more to me in a series, it's you can't get too high, you can't get too low, and the job's not done until you won four games. Three games, the job's not done. You got to win four.
We're going to take a break, and then I'm going to do something you probably won't like, but that's too bad because the assistant has to take
what
over.
What a shocker.
Next, fourth quarter. The Zora Stevenson Show, formerly known as Bucks at Six. I'm the assistant Homer. Other than for this segment, unless, Zora, you have something that you want to address that hasn't been to this point about the first game or about the series, with the insight that you would have having followed this team and these players. Do you have any Doc Rivers stuff? Did you interact with
him? No, I haven't interacted with Doc much. I know I'm good friends with Kate Scott, though, who is the play-by-play announcer in Philly. And she had nothing but wonderful things to say about how he welcomed her to Philly when she arrived there a couple years ago and working with him. You know, what I did appreciate was, you know, a lot's probably been said about Doc. You know, he's been put in a really tough situation, and it seems like him and Dame, you know, in that week that the team had to prepare for the playoffs, really enhanced their relationship. And he appreciates how honest and authentic Doc is in mm-hmm. their conversations and even when talking to the media. And that's most important is what the players think of him. I mean, obviously, the outside world is always going to have an opinion. But for Dame to come out and say that, I thought that was really big and said a lot. So those are my parting words. But the rest of us talking is just what we think is going to happen. Now we just got to wait and see.
I thought also to ask you about Chris Middleton. I don't know how healthy he is or if you know, like, well, he's just somebody. You can always count on him because I thought it was huge. He made shots that they needed in the second half because they put the sixth grade double team on Damian.
Agreed. For him to have 23-10 for the couple years that he has had, just like I root for Drew, I root for Chris, and it was great to see. Now it's just all consistency, right? Like, if we see that again in game two, I'll feel a lot better.
I don't know but why you better. Wouldn't. I don't know how healthy he is. Is he older? Does he just always play hurt, or is it just, I mean, I don't have an answer because I don't know.
Clear, like, Homer, all these guys have some sort of, like, ailment come this time of year. Like, that's why Dame said, I'm as good as I'm going to be, because something hurts at this time of year for everybody, whether it's on the injury report or not. Now, Chris has just had, like, you know, unfortunate events back to back to back when it comes to the health of his body. And, yeah, that comes with time. It comes with the way you play. I don't think he's got an answer for it either of why it keeps happening. But, you know, he's figured out a way to be impactful in game one, and I just hope it, you know, continues. And we'll wait to see the status of the big guy. That's
yes, do you have any calf injury update in terms of Tony Smith told me during the year that it's just serious and it's a pain. You think you're better and you're not. And he said before the series started, said Giannis is out for the series. He's not playing until, and if he said, if I'm running things, I just can't put the risk in there, and he's going to miss the first series, and the team's got to do it without him. But and that was said before anything else was said. It was right after watching it because he was my calf expert. He told me during the Marquette season somebody got an injury, and I said, that's calf. Come on, calves are nothing. He goes like, there's nothing you've said that's worse than that, because it's the exact opposite. People think it, and then the players feel they're ready, and then you just can't put them back because there's that risk of other stuff that could occur. But you never dealt with a calf injury, huh? All right.
No, I didn't. I mean, I didn't deal with contact, really, Homer.
What? That's all. It doesn't have to be contact. Once your calf just—I don't know. How, I don't even know how they happen.
It was not. No, you're right. That was Giannis was a non-contact. Which it was really like, I mean, I've watched the replay. Yeah. I've never dealt with a calf, nothing more than tightness and soreness. And so I can't personally speak to, you know, how that feels. It's just so hard to keep Giannis off the floor. So it'll be interesting to
see.
That's
what Tony said. He said, you have to get, he didn't say it with Giannis, you just have to get players mad. You can't. And they're going to all think they can play, and they're never ready when they think they're ready with a calf. So I don't know what that means. Well, he said it'd be the whole series is what he'd live by. All right, now, since you're no longer doing the Bucks, at least for now, who knows about the future, now I can get you, you get to say only one sentence or two about every player, or any player I mention.
Oh, goodness.
It's what comes off the top. It's just whatever comes off the top of your mind. You ready to go?
Yeah, Chris Middleton is sneaky funny. Like, you think he's the quiet, you know.
Sneaky funny. One,
yeah, he's funny. Chris Middleton is funny.
How do you become sneaky funny? I mean, people that don't know him.
The masters don't know that you're funny.
Right, but the people on the inside, he's not sneaky funny to them. He's just funny. We just wouldn't know it.
I think he would still be sneaky because he's not like, it's not a loud joke. It's almost like you could miss it. Like, wait, what did I just hear? Really, really nice guy. If you can't tell, I'm a big Chris Middleton fan.
You're a fan of everyone. But,
I am.
I know. That's good.
I love the Bucks. It's a great organization to be around. Let me think of something else.
All right. No, that's what they, no, you can't, you can't, you can't think about it. It has to just come up. All right, Pat Connaughton.
No, I was just going to say, he goes to a lot of Notre Dame football games, and he's still very much involved. He went all the way to Ireland when Notre Dame football played in Ireland. So I still run into Pat a good bit because he's always at Notre Dame.
Well, you're the for people who don't know, that don't follow Notre Dame football, you're the on-field analyst.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, which is super fun. And that's been a great experience. You want me to go down all the players? Are we really doing
Hold on, we might not get to all of them. You're going to be on again. Brooke Lopez.
Yeah, we can't. I'll never forget when Splash Mountain was closing, and it was a Detroit-Cleveland road trip. Okay, Homer, this is not like we were nowhere in Florida. And Brooke Lopez took the off day and went and rode Splash Mountain like multiple times. Flew to in between games. Flew to Orlando just so he could ride Splash Mountain and be one of the last people that rode it before it closed. And that was and I already knew like the fandom, but I was like, okay, that's next level.
Right, but he's like he's beyond next level. I mean, it's hard for people I think to realize like he's that crazy. It's about Disney, right? Or
Yes, it's Disney. It's Disney. And he's serious. And I love the passion. Last thing. You may notice Brooke Lopez got a haircut. He only gets a haircut two times in the season, right before media day and right before the playoffs. So if you notice Brooke Lopez with a haircut, I'm doing all this, like, random thing.
Random things.
Okay. So he only gets a haircut twice in the season, right before media day and right before the playoffs. So that's why his hair looks different now, because he got his playoff haircut.
But you knew it was coming. Other people may not have known it was coming.
Yes, I knew the playoff haircut was coming, and then he'll get it again right before media day because his mom wants him to look good on picture day.
Because what?
Because he's got to look good for picture day.
But that's
for media day.
He feels that way, or he does that for somebody else?
Well, that's a good question.
I don't think most people care how well they look on picture day. That's my guess. Most of the players.
Well,
maybe I'm wrong.
Jimmy Butler.
All right, we've got a minute left. So the last minute, even though he's got the calf injury, is Giannis.
Can we save that as a tease for next week?
Sure, yes. But I want random. Yes. I don't want you to think about it.
No, I know. It's got to come to me. Those Chris and Brooke came to me. I got like something Giannis has to. It just has to, like, you know, nothing's coming to me right now that would be, you know, worthy of
what I tell people, because I don't know him. I said I've never heard a bad story about Giannis other than the ladder or something that's somewhere. I said I can't believe it. I said I heard once. Can't confirm it, that he peed in a pool when he was eight somewhere. But that's the worst story
eight?
I've ever heard about Giannis. I don't know.
8 years old.
Yes. Every 8-year-old boy pees in a pool. Come on.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I don't know. It's hard to believe that anybody could, that someone wouldn't be upset with them. But that's, so I'll save till the next time. I don't know when you're on next, but I know you're on next sometime, some game. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, this was fun.
I know, you're good. At random. Thanks, Zora.
All right, bye.
Maybe we'll get Tony Smith next time as well. Next.